I'd like to welcome you to Essential Church as we begin week four of our quarantine time together. And I've been thinking through this whole ordeal in the virus, a lot of topic about, we're learning a lot about this virus. And you know what makes this virus so unique is a combination of two things. One is that it's highly contagious. It's very easily caught. It's very sticky, as some people have said. But the other thing that makes it very unique is the fact that you could be carrying it and have no idea that you're even a carrier, because you won't show any symptoms for up to 14 days. And there are some people, actually many people, who can have the virus and never show any symptoms at all. They're completely asymptomatic about it. In other words, you could be carrying it right now and have no idea that you're carrying it and have the ability to spread it to somebody else. And it makes me think about those times when I don't know if you're like me, I'll sometimes sit in the ER when I'm there for, I'll have an injury or something. And you ever just sit in the ER while you're waiting and you look around the room, you're like, I wonder what everybody else in here has got. Like you want to sit next to the guy with the broken leg because you can't catch that. Because if you sit next to somebody else, you're kind of like wondering, I don't know what he's in here for and I don't want to catch it. And I kind of feel that way every time I go to the grocery store right now, that you're looking around at somebody like, I wonder if they're a carrier. I wonder if they're susceptible to it. And so it kind of makes you nervous anywhere you go right now. And I think that kind of gets to the other piece of it is, not only is the virus contagious, but the emotions and the feelings that surround it, I think, are also extremely contagious as well. The ideas around this are very contagious. Like, for instance, somebody got the idea at some point a couple weeks ago that what you're going to need more than anything else is toilet paper. And because somebody had that idea, this isn't just a Hampton Roads thing. This is literally nationwide. There's this idea that we're all going to not have the ability to get toilet paper at some point. And as a result, it's becoming very, very hard to find. And so if the stopping the spread of the virus or being a fear of getting the virus isn't enough to make you not want to shake somebody's hand, I think the fact that people are struggling to find toilet paper ought to make you a little wary of shaking somebody's hand at some point over the next couple weeks. And so the ideas are being contagious. The emotions around this are contagious. We all know that whenever we're faced with something that's unknown and we're uncertain about what the future is going to be and it's unpredictable, that's just a recipe for fear. It's just sort of like the breeding ground for fear. And there's no way of knowing what lies ahead and what the next weeks or months are going to be like. You see everybody put these graphs and everybody keeps telling you that's only as accurate as the information you put in it, and there's all different kinds of factors, all different kinds of variables to consider as you're going through this. And then you add to that fear drives TV ratings on top of that, and you just have this recipe for this contagious fear to just spread throughout our society right now. And in the midst of all that, we're beginning this new series called Quarantine Yet Contagious. Because right now, while you're quarantined at home, you are still a carrier. If you have a relationship with Jesus Christ, you have within you that which is also just as contagious as every other fear or every other emotion or every other idea, or even as the virus is as it's moving around its way around the world. You have just as much to be able to share. You should be a carrier of the love of Jesus Christ that he's shown you. You've been shown a love at a time when you were unlovable, and that's been put inside you, it's been placed inside of you such that you would be a carrier of that kind of love that you could share with somebody else. You're a carrier of a faith that's grounded in the knowledge that there is life after death, because Jesus Christ rose from the dead as a sign, as a picture, as a promise, that there is something beyond this life to look for, which gives us hope, that we have a hope for eternity that we can share with other people. You have a hope that should be contagious within you, that even in the sight of the fear or the uncertainty, there's a faith that drives us and a hope that fuels us as we move through these uncertain times. And so around the world right now, where it seems like the ideas and are very contagious when it comes to people's selfishness and people's fear and despair, it's a time right now where you, who have a relationship with Jesus Christ, need to be focused in on how is it that I can be just as contagious with my love and with my faith and with my hope. And so that's what I want to be looking at this morning. We're going to go back to a story in the Old Testament that features four guys who live their entire life in quarantine. And it comes out of the book of 2 Kings chapter 7. And so I want to give you some of the historical background so you'll understand where we're at and what's going on. I'm going to start probably with at least an area in Old Testament history that most of y'all are familiar with, and that's where Moses brings the people out of Egypt. So you've got the great Exodus, they cross the Red Sea, eventually they end up in the Promised Land. Sometime later, they have a king, and David becomes the king, and he's a man after God's own heart. He's a wonderful king. He leads the people to follow after God, and the nation of Israel has a lot of prosperity in that time. They have a lot of military success during that time. And what ends up happening after David's reign, about two generations after that, there is a long series of kings who don't have a relationship with God, who turn their back on God and lead people down a different path. And so what happens is the kingdom splits in half. There's a northern part and a southern part. The northern part comes to be known as Israel. The southern part is known as Judah. The southern capital is Jerusalem. And the northern capital is Samaria. And so when we're talking here in 2 Kings 7, we're in the northern part, focused in on the capital of Samaria, with one of the many kings and all of the kings that were in the north who turned their back on God and walked away. And so God is trying to get their attention. He's saying, what's going on right now and the way that you are and the path you're going down is not right. I don't want you there. And so Elijah comes and he warns the king and he says, if you continue to go down this path, God is going to give your kingdom over. In other words, you are going to lose the kingdom all together. And he warns them of this. And leading up to that ultimate judgment that God's going to be bringing, God sort of sends a series of warning shots to the city. And one of them is where the king of Aram, the Arameans, come down and they lay siege to the city. When he lays siege to a city, instead of going in and actually attacking the city by force, what they would simply do is just surround the city with their army and basically just wait and starve them out. You cut off all the supplies going in so that nothing can go in, nothing can come out, and eventually they're going to run out of resources, which, by the way, is probably what most of people are fearing right now, is that they're going to get to the point where they run out of resources. We're going to be sort of starved out within our cities or within our homes at some point. That's sort of what the fear of this whole stay-at-home order seems to be brought. And so people begin to hoard goods. Why? Because you're afraid of that kind of thing happening. And so in this setting, what's happened in 2 Kings chapter 7 is they've been cut off, and it's gone on for some time, and it gets to the point where things are getting dire. I mean, extremely dire, extremely dangerous to the survival of the city. And when you go back into chapter 6, you see that as a result of the siege, it says there was a great famine in the city, so much so it lasted so long that somebody sold I imagine these are sort of like, when people ever give like examples, and you'll hear some examples, like some extreme examples, either of price gouging or of different circumstances. So the author here writes out and he kind of, you know, shares like two of the extreme examples of just how bad things have gotten. It says that somebody sold a donkey's head for 80 pieces of silver. In other words, they've already, you know, a donkey was not an animal that they would eat, but they had gotten to the point where they had basically had to eat a working animal, not an animal they grow for as livestock. They'd eaten the animal, and the only thing that left was the head that normally nobody would even eat, but because food was so scarce, it went for 80 pieces of silver, which is a ton of money. And then if that wasn't crazy enough, to just let you know just how bad stuff got, it says that they heard this other story where somebody paid 5 pieces of silver for a cup of bird poop. I mean, anything that you could in any way, shape, or form get something out of, I guess this might get a little graphic, but there's still some seeds and berries left in bird poop that they don't digest, and so I guess people are looking at that and saying, well, hey, I'll give you $5 for that cup of bird poop because it's gotten that bad and that serious. There's even another story that you read in 2 Kings 6 where they had even turned to cannibalism. They'd actually gotten to the point where they had sacrificed a child. Now, that seems crazy to begin with, but maybe after you've been in quarantine a certain amount of time, I don't know if maybe you get to the point where you're like, well, all right, maybe not. That's probably in bad taste. What's happening, though, is that hope is fading fast in the city. That's kind of what the point of him explaining this is, that hope is fading fast. Studies show that you can live for 40 days without food. You can go about 4 days without water. You can go about 4 minutes without oxygen. But what you'll find is it's hard to live at all without hope. When somebody gets to the point where they've lost hope, it's difficult to continue to survive and to live. I think that's why my favorite verse in all of the scriptures is Psalm 27:13. It says, I would have despaired. Now, despair is when you get to the point where you've lost all hope. And so the psalmist says, I would have gotten to that place where I'd lost all hope. I would have gotten to the point of absolute despair if it wasn't for one thing. If I did not believe, I would see the goodness of the Lord once again in my lifetime. I would have despaired. I would have gotten to the place where I had no hope. If I did not believe, I would see the goodness of the Lord once again in my lifetime. And you see, now that's a promise. That is a verse that I've held on to through some very difficult times in my life. And so I just want to kind of bring that out to you right now. When you get to this place where you kind of wonder and the fears creep up and the worry creeps up and you begin to have some sort of sense that, you know, I'm looking at the circumstances and what's going on and it's really sort of making me struggle to continue to hold on to this hope. When you look at what's going on in the news and you look at the reports that are coming in, when you see that the bills continue to come in and the checks don't seem to be coming in, like the paycheck's not coming in, the stimulus check that you keep hearing about is not coming in, the unemployment check, it's not coming in, but the bills are still coming in, and it's all of a sudden like this evidence of all the things that I've been fearing is starting to hit me. It's when the evidence of fear comes in that hope begins to fade away. And so when the evidence of your fears comes in and your hope fades away, I go back to this passage from Psalm 27:13. It says, you know, I would allow that despair to creep in if I didn't have a firm belief. You see, faith is what fights your fear. If I didn't have a firm belief, I would lose all hope if I didn't have a firm belief or a faith that I will see God's goodness once again in my lifetime. There's going to come a day and there's going to come a time when the season that we're going through right now is a story we tell. It's a part of our life. It's a part of our history. And we will get through it, and there'll be a time where once again we see God's goodness, where once again things are back to a place of restoration and wholeness and health, and all of the things right now that we're worried about are going to be dealt with. We're going to get to that place. And I have a firm belief in God's goodness that he will not leave us during this time. And so as this quarantine continues, and things get hard to find, like, you know, and hope becomes as hard to find as toilet paper is. I just want to remind you that because of the relationship you have with Jesus Christ, you know, he's put in you and he's planted in you a faith and a hope and a love that's yours to share with this world. And so as we get back to our story, we're going to begin to see how this plays out. Now, it says at the same time that we see this stuff going around us, we know we have promises from God that God will never leave us nor forsake us. He says, look at the birds of the field, the birds of the air and the lilies of the field, how God cares for them and clothes them, and will he not do the very same for you? And it's because of those kind of promises that I know that I will see the goodness of the Lord once again in my lifetime, because I have a relationship with a God that says, I will provide for you, and I will care for you, and I love you, and I will never leave you. But when you don't have that kind of hope, and you don't have that kind of faith to rely on, what do you think happens? The blame game begins. And it's the same today as it was 2,800 years ago. I mean, you already see countries are blaming countries, politicians are blaming one another, we're blaming other people in our community, whatever might come up. We're always looking at somebody to blame for the situation that we're in right now. We're blaming the beachgoers and the partygoers, and the NBA was blaming Rudy Gobert. All these things, we're always looking for somebody to blame as a result of it. You go over how 2 Kings chapter 7 begins off, and it says this. It says, the king is hunting down Elijah because he's blaming Elijah for the situation that's going on, because Elisha had come to him and said, listen, famine's going to come and the king of Aram's going to come down. And so all Elisha did was just give him the message that God gave him, and so the king gets really frustrated at the circumstance, and so he's looking to blame Elisha for it, and so he basically sends his entourage out with him going with it and says, we're going to go get the head of Elisha. And so he gets there right to the door, and Elisha has barricaded the door, but is going to talk to him through the door because he obviously doesn't want his head taken off. And he says, listen, I know you're mad, I know you're angry, I know you're looking for somebody to blame, but here's the thing. 24 hours from now, like, I know right now people are paying $80 for a donkey head and they're buying cups of bird poop. I'm telling you right now, by this time tomorrow, for a nickel, you can buy a pound of flour. In other words, the stuff that's going on right now, just like that, God's going to change all of our circumstances just like that, because God has the power to do that. And I can already tell you, God is going to. Now, I'm not telling you that's what's going to happen right now in our time. I don't have that word from God. I'm just telling you, like I mentioned last week, just like that, God can change your entire circumstance. And Elisha, in this moment, has been told by God that our entire circumstance is going to change tomorrow. And I don't know when that day is going to come for us in this time and in this crisis. At some point, God is going to shift and move, and there's going to be a change, and the restoration is going to begin. And for Elisha, he knew it was going to begin the next day. And the king's looking at this and he's going, there's no way. As a matter of fact, the servant of the king is right there and he basically laughs in his face. He's like, there's no way, it is not possible that God could do something like that. And Elisha says, okay, it's going to happen, but you won't be there to enjoy it. And as the story ends, you see that what plays out. Sure enough, it happens. Now, this always, you know, it kind of comes up that we cannot see what is possible when God intervenes. We cannot see what is possible when God intervenes. We always look at our life, and all we're thinking about is the known facts that we have, and we assume that we can know everything that there is to know or see everything there is to see, and we even think we can see beyond the realm of what is possible. But what's impossible for us to understand is just what is possible with God, because God does not work in the same constraints that we work in. And so when Elisha says to him, I know right now things are as bad as they possibly are, but all of your circumstances are going to change just like that, they said, there's no way. So let's see how it plays out. So the focus in 2 Kings 7 shifts from like the two most powerful people in the city, the prophet of God, Elisha, and the king, and it shifts out to these four guys who live their life in complete quarantine just outside the city. And it says, now there were four men who had leprosy just outside the entrance of the city gate, and they said to one another, so they've been living their life. Leprosy in that day and age, they understood it was to be a contagious disease, and nobody wanted to catch it because it was sort of a death sentence. It was a slow, gradual death that would result as a from it. And so they were banished from the city. They had to live their entire life in quarantine. They would survive basically on charity and trash. Whatever somebody would give them or on the trash that people would throw out, that's what they lived on. And if times were tough for them when it was good times for everybody else, imagine what times are like and this situation, where there's a famine inside the city, there's little to no charity coming out. There's no charity coming out to them. There's not even any trash being thrown out to them, which is sort of a reminder to be thinking about that during a time like this, this is hurting some people more than it's hurting others. And so for these guys sitting out there, they look at their situation and says, okay, you know, things aren't like they used to be, and they're not going to get back to that place. And so they are talking about this. They said, basically, let's face it, we got three options. Option one, we could stay here and do nothing and die. That's option one. Option two, we could find some way to get into the city, but I don't know why we would do that. There's a famine going on in the city, and we would starve to death, and they're just like everybody else. So option three is we make our way down to the enemy camp, and we surrender and give ourselves up and hopefully to be considered as prisoners of war. And if they take us as prisoners of war, then hey, we just might survive this thing. If not, they'll kill us, and that'll be it for us as well. And so they're looking at three options. None of those are good options, right? But they look at the first one and say, well, that's a guarantee, so we're not going to go there. The second one's a guarantee. At least the third one, there's just some sliver of hope. There's some sliver of possibility. So we might as well go with at least the one that has some sliver of possibility or sliver of hope. And so it says in verse 5, just before dark, they got up from the camp, and they went down to the camp of the Arameans. But when they reached the edge of the camp, to their surprise, nobody was there. For what had happened was the Lord had caused the Arameans to hear the sounds of chariots and horses and a great army, such that they began to say to one another, oh look, I think the king of Israel has hired the Hittites and the Egyptian armies to come and attack us. And so they got up and they fled in the middle of the night, and they left their tents and their horses and their donkeys, and they left the camp just as it was as they ran for their lives. What you see in this camp is the power of fear. The contagious nature of fear, that this unfounded fear that they had, they heard some sounds, they heard some rumblings, and somehow somebody got the notion. It may have really been just the lepers walking down there. They just may have been quite loud as they were coming down, knocking over rocks and whatnot as they were coming down hills or whatever. You know, as you're shimmying down a hill, you could have some rocks rolling. I don't know what it was, but they started hearing the sounds, and all of a sudden, in their minds, they had these fears that had welled up in their imagination, caused and fueled in this situation by the hand of God. And so they feared for their lives, and all of a sudden the word spread throughout, and because of fear and panic, they drop everything, make dumb decisions, and they haul out of there, which is exactly what people do when they begin to fear. In this case, God uses this for his purposes. And it says, and so when the men who had leprosy reached the edge of the camp, they went into the tents and they found food in there. It says, so they ate and they drank. And then they found silver and gold and clothes. Clothes, by the way, were very valuable back in that day because they were all handmade. And it says, and they went off and they hid them. And then they returned back and entered another tent, and they took some stuff out of there and they went and hid that also. I mean, their reaction is so predictable, right? It's the same reaction like the first time you found toilet paper, eggs, fat-free milk. I don't know if you like fat-free milk. I don't know what it is. You can find whole milk at 2%, but it's almost like you can't find fat-free milk. So the first time that you went into the store recently and you found toilet paper, eggs, milk, ground beef, and chicken, the first time you found those, you probably tried to fill up your car as much as you possibly could. It's predictable. It's exactly what they did. It was just hoard, and they went off, stored it, came back, got some more. So maybe once you found it, you went to the next store and the next store. I mean, look, come on, let's face it. When you found what you needed, did you stop at that first store or did you go to a second and a third and a fourth like, oh, they got some stuff, I'm going to keep looking? Some of you are still going out and looking even though you don't even need right now. I know, it's just the way our mentality is. And so what happens is these guys basically are hoarding and looting all this stuff because the first instinct we have when we find something is me, 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 mine, 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 more, more, more. And that's exactly what they do. I mean, they just chow down, drink so much they probably got drunk and went and stuffed as much stuff as they possibly could, buried it in a hole, hid it somewhere, gold, silver, clothes, everything they could possibly get their hands on. But at some point, in the midst of doing all this, the inevitable happens. Conviction hits. You see, there's a certain point in everybody where you get so selfish and so self-focused, a conviction hits. And you don't even have to have a relationship with God for this conviction to hit. This can hit, anybody can have that sense of conviction. God is always working to convince or to convict people of sin. Now, what people do as a result of it's different. I mean, we've already seen this kind of happen. I was reading about a billionaire, David Giffen. I may have mispronounced his name. He decides he's going to send out a post on Instagram sort of encouraging everybody else to quarantine because he's quarantined himself away from everybody and he wants everybody else to do the same that he has done. And so he takes a few snapshots and pictures of him quarantining himself on his, I don't know, 70, 80, 120-foot yacht out off of a tropical island somewhere and just saying, you know, I'm safe and quarantined. I hope everybody else is doing the same. Really? Really? You want us to do the same? Well, the reaction was so strong against it, he felt the conviction of, oh yeah, I guess it's probably a little insensitive of me to tell everybody else to quarantine like I'm doing and brag about my ability to quarantine. Probably this isn't a really good look for me. What's he do? Out of conviction, he ends up canceling his Instagram account. Or maybe you heard about the Colvin brothers, that you may not even know the name, but those are the two guys over in Tennessee. They had a business where they would buy and sell stuff on Amazon and eBay and whatnot to make a profit, and they would always look for trends. Whatever they thought was being a hot item, they would go around, they would try to buy it up, and they'd resell it on Amazon, on eBay. And so in the same way, they saw this trend that people were looking after things like those N95 masks, and they were looking for sanitizer. And so what they did is they went around to every store they could in their region, and they ended up buying like 17,000 bottles of hand sanitizer, with the idea of then selling it online for a profit. Well, as many of you probably have heard, once the media found out about it, the authorities found out about it, all of a sudden conviction sort of hit in, and if you read, they didn't actually, it wasn't, a part of it was confiscated, but the vast majority, like two-thirds of it, they ended up donating to charities around the area. Now, I don't know whether that's because of the conviction that set in, or if it's because of the media pressure and the conviction that came, or the very fact that it was going to be seized from them anyway led them to make a right choice, a good choice to help people with what it is that they had hoarded. I don't know. I wasn't there. But either way, the conviction moved to the right place. Now, when conviction is going to move you, and the purpose of conviction, when God moves and convicts you in your spirit, the point of conviction is to move you to take action. That you see you're doing something, like these guys right here, they're looting and they're hoarding all this stuff for themselves, and they begin to feel a sense of conviction. We'll read about that in just a second. Conviction is intended to move you to take action. It doesn't always move you to take action. Sometimes the conviction moves you to rationalize away the conviction. And so what happens in here with them is they begin to get moved with conviction. I mean, they're sitting there, stuffing themselves while people back in the city are eating bird poop, literally. And so it hits them, and they say, you know, verse 9, they said to each other, what we're doing is not right. That's conviction. What we're doing is not right. This sense that, you know, what I'm doing right now isn't right. I'm liking it. I'm enjoying it. I'm looking out for myself. I'm in a good place right now. But, you know, when I look at this in comparison to what's going on around me, when I look at what I have compared to what somebody else has, when I look what God's blessed me with what my ability is to bless somebody else with, there's a sense of me that just knows this isn't right. And I can't explain exactly where this sense of right and wrong comes from around all humanity, outside of just saying simply it's the Spirit of God that convicts of something that is right and something that is wrong. And so for some people, it takes social pressure of social media. For some people, it takes the national media. For some people, it takes the authorities to coming in. For some people, though, it just hits them in their soul where they just have this sense and conviction that says, you know, what I'm doing right now is not right. And so it says what we're doing is not right. This is a day of good news, and we're keeping it to ourselves. I mean, something great has happened. We found a resource that everybody else needs. This is good news. We have some. This is great. But here, what the problem is we're keeping it all to ourselves. General rule in life, anytime you're walking down a path of selfishness, it's a path that just isn't right. I mean, the root of all of our sin comes back to selfishness. And the thing about it is we have to be honest with the fact that the very first thought we typically have when we're blessed with something is a selfish thought. And it's not until you've allowed your life to be so touched and transformed by Jesus Christ who taught us to love one another and to care for one another that you can move out of that selfish realm, because selfishness is very contagious. That's what the hoarding mentality is. But, you know, a giving mentality is also just as equally contagious. And so they look at it and say, you know, what we're doing is not right. I don't know which one of them said it. One of them said it's just not right. And you could see maybe that idea was contagious amongst the four of them and said, yeah, it's not. I feel that same conviction. This is a day of good news, and we're keeping it all to ourselves. And so amongst the four of them, they realize this idea spreads among the four of them. Each of them catch on and realize what we're doing is not right. And it says, you know, if we wait any longer, punishment's going to overtake us. I mean, it's just, God can't bless us like this and have us not share this blessing without in some way, shape, or form God becoming disappointed and angry with what it is we're doing, what we've been given. And so it says, let's go at once. Let's do this right now. Let's not put this off anymore and go back to the city and let them know in the royal palace what has happened and what is here and what's available to them. Now, they could have just as easily in that moment, instead of taking the action of going back and telling it, they could have just as easily reasoned to themselves and said, well, would they have done the same for us? I mean, what if one of those four guys, one guy says, you know, what we're doing is not right, man. We really need to go share. This day's a day of good news. We got to share this. Now, that idea right there is the power to be contagious. If somebody else in that same meeting had brought up another idea, it could be just as contagious as well. The idea that would come back and say, yeah, but what have they ever done for us, man? We've been living off of charity and trash all this time. You can't tell me that if they found all this stuff, the first people they'd go to is the four lepers sitting outside the city and help us out. No, we'd be in just the same situation. We'd be out there left for dead. So why should we go do for them what they wouldn't do for us? And you see, what's funny is that sounds like the golden rule, but that's the garbage rule. The golden rule is to treat others the way I want to be treated. The golden rule is to do unto others as I would want them to do unto me. That if somebody else found this stash, if somebody else found this food, toilet paper, whatever it is, I would want them to share that with me. So I want to do to others what I would want them to do for me. The garbage rule is, well, I'm going to treat them the way they treated me. Well, it's what they did to me. You know, they had it coming to them. What, they wouldn't have done this for me, so why should I do it for them? That's trash. That's absolute trash. And that kind of thinking is also contagious as well. And you've heard it. You've heard people talk about it. It says, you know, they wouldn't help me, so I'm not going to help them. No. The example and the message that we see from Jesus Christ is we treat others the way we want to be treated. And so that's exactly what they do. They go back to the city. So they went out and they called up the city gatekeepers, told them, said, hey, we went to the Aramean camp and nobody was there. Didn't hear the sound of anyone, the horses, the donkeys, and they had all left. And they shouted the good news and reported throughout the palace. Now, I was thinking about this, you know, going back and sharing. As a church, many of you all know by now, I think at some point we're going to become known as a toilet paper church, I think. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing. At any other time, I would not want to be called the toilet paper church, but I think pretty soon it's what we're going to be known in the Hampton Roads community is the toilet paper church, simply because we've had access to 5,000 rolls of toilet paper. Now, if we had had the mentality of selfishness, what we would have done is we would have said, okay, we've been given this stuff. We're going to give it to our people. It's going to be for our church members. Because membership has its privileges. And what we're going to do is we're going to look through the tithe roll, and we got some 2-ply, we got some 1-ply, and we're going to see how much you gave. For those who've been given tithes, 2-ply for you. Those who've been coming and attending but haven't been given yet, Well, because you're part of the family, we can give you some one-ply. It ain't going to be so good, but hey, you know, if you've been thinking about it more, you've been tithing, then we could have helped you out. Anybody else? You're shut out. Sorry. That would have been the mentality of the garbage rule. We're only going to care for ourselves. We're only going to look out for our own. But instead, we just looked at it and we said, hey, we have a resource. We're going to share it. We had the mentality simply because of the way that God has loved us, the way that God has shared with us, is we've been blessed so we can be a blessing. And so we've just sought to be a conduit of blessing to whatever God's been given us, whether that be 5,000 some odd rolls of toilet paper, whether that be many of you have had the resources to be able to make masks and be able to sew them together and give those out. That's been happening as well. We have sanitizer that we use. As you know, for those of you who have been to our services here in Virginia Beach, you'll know that we do sanitizer on the hands. By the way, that all started back when the bird flu thing was going around. When the bird flu was going around, we realized, you know, we needed to practice some sort of sanitary measures and cleansing, and so we started using sanitizer before we came up for communion. So we had all this communion around the facility, and I think we shipped all that off to CHKD or to one of the hospitals because, you know, we don't need that right now. There'll be a time when we come back for services again, and we can go find it then. But right now, there's a need. There's no reason for that to sit in our building for the next couple weeks or however long this may be while there's somebody out there who desperately has a need for it. And so the mentality that we've had as a church is the same one that, you know, we need to have for one another on an individual basis, because you are the church. Where you are at right now, you are the church. Clearly, now more than any other time in human history do we realize the church is not a building. The church is not a group of people who are gathered together on a Sunday morning in a building in one location. Right now, you see a beautiful picture of what the church really is. It is you, right where you're at, being the church, being the hands and the feet of Jesus Christ. And many of y'all have done just that. And you have gone out and you've delivered supplies to people who couldn't get out. There's been people who've, you know, put it on our Facebook or direct message and said, hey, I need some food, I need some toilet paper, I need some medicine. And what's been amazing is our staff has done very little of that delivery, very, very little. Rather, it's been the church just simply being the church in our community and realizing today's a day of good news. I got good news for you. I got this stuff. I can bring it to you. Today's a day of good news. We got 5,000 rolls of labor. We'll give it to you. Today's a day of good news, and we're not going to keep it for ourselves. We've been blessed that we can be a blessing, and so that's exactly what they do. They go back to the city and say, hey, this has happened, and good news is also contagious, and so they spread this hope of good news throughout the city. It says it spreads throughout the city really quickly, but whenever good news comes out, whenever you try to share hope, whenever you try to do unto others as you'd have them do. And whenever you try to love somebody the way Jesus Christ loves you, there's always going to be a skeptic out there. And sure enough, the king and a couple of the powerful, influential guys in the city are like, oh, wait a minute. I tell you what they're doing right now. It's all a trap. It's a trap. You know, it's like the Admiral Fish guy from Star Wars. Oh, it's a trap. It's a trap. Well, what they're doing, they're just trying to, you know, they're just trying to convince us to go out there to get all the stuff. Then they're going to come out of the hills and they're going to get us. It's a trap. And so they had a hard time believing the good news that day. And eventually they send a few people out, say, hey, what do we have to lose? We're going to die if we stay here. Let's just send a few people out there and check it out. And sure enough, they check it out and see that it really is good news. And whenever there's any kind of story of good news, people are always wondering, you know, what's the catch? What's the catch? There's got to be something here that you couldn't possibly be this loving. You couldn't possibly be this caring. You couldn't possibly want to do this for me for no other reason than just to care or to show love. What's the catch? And the reality is that when you are someone who is sharing the faith and the hope and the love that Jesus Christ has given you, there is no catch. There is no catch with faith, hope, and love, because it's so different than the world system of everything else that they know and everything else that they do. And so what you see in this time in history in 2 Kings 7 is God intervened into their life during this time because He didn't like the path and the direction they were going. And one of the phrases I hear from a lot of people is just saying, I just can't wait till things can get back to normal. I just can't wait till things can get back to normal. Can I let you in on something? I think the one thing God doesn't want to see happen is for things to get back to normal. What God does here in this city, in this time in Samaria, is He's intervening into their lives simply because He doesn't like what normal has become. And I think if you're honest, if you really look at your life, there's parts of your normal that God doesn't like what normal has become for you. Where the kids have been a side piece, where you just sort of pawn them off to somebody else to raise them, to educate them, to discipline them, to care for them, and all of a sudden right now they're right in front of you. And God says, there's a new normal I want to see happen in your life and the way that you interact with together as a family. The normal was, I'm going to trust in everything else other than God to care for me and provide for me and for my future. And right now, at some point, you're going to realize the only thing you have to trust in, the only place you can really put your hope is not in Dr. Fauci, not in our political leaders, not in your job, not in the stimulus package. Your hope needs to be in Jesus Christ. Your hope needs to be in God. Your hope needs to be in the one who's the author and the creator and the sustainer of life. Because at some point, you need to come to the realization this life really is about nothing more than a loving relationship with him that you'll enjoy for all eternity. Because when you have that, the rest of the stuff doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how all this plays out over human history, because human history is ultimately working towards a climax that leads to an eternal relationship with God in heaven for those who have it or those who don't. And right now, this is like what's happened in the city. It's a warning shot that's come to the city. It says, listen, there's a real eventuality that's coming that is not going to have any relenting to it. And I firmly believe that what's going on right now is going to relent, and it's going to come back. And you're going to have the opportunity to go back to normal. But don't. But don't. Find a new normal. You see, for many of you, what you need to realize is that you've been silent carriers of your relationship with Jesus Christ up until now. You've been a silent carrier. You have it within you. People often say that, well, I've asked Jesus Christ into my heart. Yeah, but he shouldn't be staying down in there. In the same way that people can be a carrier of virus and you would never know them, many people have been living their lives for a long time up until now as a carrier of relationship with Jesus Christ, their Lord and Savior, yet nobody even knows it. And right now is a time for you to go from being a silent carrier to one that's completely contagious and spreading the love and the faith and the hope that you have, and it has only been found in him, and it's something you can now have and share with somebody else. I love the way that 1 Peter says this. Right now, he says, 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 14. 1 Peter chapter 3, verse 14 and following, he says, don't be afraid. Right now, don't be afraid. Rather, in your hearts, set apart Jesus Christ as Lord. In other words, make a firm foundation on this, okay? This is not a time right now for you to be quiet and subdued about your relationship with Jesus Christ. Rather, set apart Jesus Christ is Lord, and says, and always be prepared to give an answer to everyone who asks of the reason for the hope that you have. You see, right now is not a time and a season where a lot of people are purveyors of hope. Right now, it's a time and a season where people are filled with fears, confirmation of fears, which is leading to despair, and you have the opportunity to be one who shares hope. And somebody's going to look at you and say, what on earth do you have a reason to have hope in the midst of this? Is there something you don't know that I don't know? Yeah, there is. Let me give you the reason for the hope that I have. In order to be able to give that reason, you have to know that you know that you know you have a relationship with Jesus Christ and understand what it is that God has given you, what it is that God has promised you because of that relationship. And he goes on, I love that, he says, but do it with gentleness and respect. In other words, don't be a jerk about this. He says, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your good behavior in Christ might be ashamed of their slander. Now, we have watched this play out over the past 3 weeks. If you've been following us on Facebook, you've watched this play out. When we first announced that we had something like 1,500 rolls of toilet paper to give out, all the haters came out. What we're trying to do is something good. Because of what Jesus Christ has done for us, we're trying to share and love our community. So what does it come out? You guys must be the one hoarding all this stuff. That's why I can't find nothing. Essential Church is out there hoarding all this stuff just so you can look good in the midst of this whole crisis and help people out. Right. You guys aren't very good. And we're like, okay, let me let you in. This is all commercial supply. It's individually wrapped. You can't buy this in stores. It came from our commercial supplier. We had the opportunity to get it. We took our own supply that we had out of our building. We literally emptied, because we have like 1,200, 1,400 people coming out of our building every given week. We're not going to have 1,200 to 1,400 people coming out of our building for the foreseeable future right now. So what are we going to, why on earth would we keep all of this toilet paper hoarded up in here when there's a community in need? And so what we did was just simply say, listen, this is commercial supply from our own store. We had a delivery coming in like we get every single month coming in with all of our supplies. Toilet paper was a part of it. We said, hey, we'll take as much as we can get so we can give it away. I said, there's a difference between the mentality that's going to hoard and the mentality that's going to give. And so the first time we put it out, we had to like fight against that. And then people were kind of skeptical about it. So we put out a second time, and Pastor Alex said, hey, Steve, do we need to like announce and let people know on the front end where this came from? I was like, no, I think we dealt with that last time. I was wrong. All the haters came right back out with all the same garbage. We had to defend ourselves. It was literally, I mean, it was like you had to be on there constantly because stuff can I mean, you want to talk about stuff, how stuff can spiral out of control virally pretty quick. Because, like, one of the haters jumps on, then that hate spreads hate, and that hate spreads hate, and that hate spreads hate. And pretty soon, like, we're like the worst church in the neighborhood. Why? Simply because we're trying to love people. I love what Peter says. Listen, you know, there's going to be some people who are going to maliciously speak against your good behavior. All right? That's going to happen. But don't listen to the slander. Don't, you know, you got to be ready to give the hope, the reason for the hope. You got to give the reason for why you're doing this and why you're sharing hope and why you're sharing love out of your faith in Jesus Christ. And so we had to defend ourselves again. Now here's what's really neat. This third time, we just gave out another couple, you know, 100, I don't know, you know, 1,500 or so rolls of toilet paper again. And this third time, there weren't as many haters, but a few of them still popped up. I know it was great. We didn't defend ourselves. The community came in and said, no, we know these people. These people are carriers of the hope. They have a relationship with Jesus Christ. They operate on a different mindset than we do. They are not the kind of people who are hoarding resources and stealing everything themselves. No, these people, there's something different about them because of the relationship they have with Jesus Christ. They have access to something we don't have access to, and the first thing they want to do with it is give it to everybody else. Let's praise them and build them up and thank our God for a community, or for having them in our community at a time like this. And I can't tell you, as a pastor and as a staff and as a church body, there's nothing better than seeing the love of Christ contagiously infect your community such that it overcomes the fear and the selfishness and the mentality that would speak out against somebody who's just trying to do good. But how's that happen? You just continue to love and love and love. Never once did we ever chastise anybody or yell at anybody or put anybody down for being skeptical of us. We just continue to show them love. We just treat others as we want to be treated. And my encouragement for you right now is to, as you move through this time, as God blesses you with things, that you'd find a way to help people with what God's blessed you with, that you'd be a conduit of the blessings that God gives you. You may have skills or abilities. You may have resources that come to you. You may be able to find stuff at stores that somebody else didn't find. Some of you literally have the gift of shopping. And you're in a healthy enough state that you can go out and you can find some resources and you can meet needs in your community. But if there was ever a time for somebody to have the gift of shopping, now is the time. Use it. Some of you have other resources. There's been some ladies in our church. I don't want to be all sexist. There may be some men too. I don't care. Some tailors, seamstress, whatever. They've been sewing up masks because masks have been short in supply. By all means, continue to do it. Because in doing so, you're spreading the hope and the faith and the love that Jesus Christ has planted in you. Let today be the day where the good news that you have is not something you keep to yourself, but something that you share. We join with you as we pray. Father, I thank you for the opportunity that we have to be messengers of hope, to carriers of love, to be contagious with our fear in the time of great, to be contagious with our faith in the time of great fear. Father, as this continues on, and as the needs increase, and as the fear increases, and as despair begins to seep in, may we truly rise up because of our relationship with you and be a tangible presence of your Son, Jesus Christ, in our world, loving those who do things that are unlovable, spreading faith for those who are overwhelmed by fear, and continuing to point to hope when people move to the point of despair. May we always be ready to give a reason for the hope that we have in you. And in Jesus' name we pray. Amen.